Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to the Bundesliga show brought to you by Over the Bar. We are back to talk more Bundesliga footy with you all. So sit back and enjoy with us as we review match week 31 of the Bundesliga. Joined this evening by Peter. How are you doing this evening?
Well, quite good after another great weekend of Bundesliga action. It's always a pleasure to spend an hour with you.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, so we'll get into it shortly, as you may well be able to notice. No Mark with us this evening. I think he's been exhausted by so much Bundesliga content, or what not Bundesliga, German football in general, which you'll all be able to enjoy soon enough as well. You and Mark have been taking in anything and everything possible, Peter. So yeah, lots to come for the channel, which is excellent. Before we get cracking, of course, all the usual bits and bolts of admin. If you can leave us a thumbs up on this video in particular, yeah, that'd be absolutely fantastic. It can really help us out. Please do join in the chat now or later if you're not able to watch us live. Let us know your thoughts on the relegation race, the race of the top four, the Leverkusen, anything and everything. There'll be plenty for us to get through in this evening's show. And make sure you subscribe as well. And make sure you give us a look to our brilliant partners, of course, Bundesliga Boxes and Bully News. Right, so tonight we're going to kick off with a little bit of Kiosk, Peter. We haven't got too much, have we, for Kiosk? But we'll get cracking with that, and then we're going to go straight into the big game. So, yeah, what have you got for us this evening?
Well, first I'll state my rather ironclad German opinion. And Germans, of course, have many ironclad opinions. But it is my contention that the journalists in the Bundesrepublik are reserving a good bit of their rigor for the Champions League fixtures that are to come this week, along with the Leverkusen Europa League fixture. We can talk a little bit about what's going on with Tuchel and Bayern if you fancy, but that was what was leading a lot of the tabloids on Sunday and on Monday. The kicker, not content with that, went ahead and put a story about Leon Goretzka feeling left out of Bayern and the national team as well. The Bayern just cannot escape criticism at this point. Dortmund obviously took a lot of heat in the Sunday press after the beatdown that Leipzig gave them, and they want to go to the finals of the Champions League, this reads. We have in the Süddeutsche, again, more Bayern stuff, and a result that I'm sure Rory will be, well, I'm not sure what Rory's going to feel about this as a German football fan and a Stuttgart fan in general. Es geht immer noch verrückter. It gets crazier still. It has reached insane proportions with Leverkusen at this juncture as they march on towards the perfect undefeated season, undefeated in 46 matches across all competitions. So those are the big stories, of course, but there's many, many, many more stories coming up this week. So don't miss out on all the great German football action, we'll have to say.
Yeah, there's a lot of European action for us to enjoy this week, isn't there? But yeah, let's just get stuck into it. There were some great games this weekend. We're going to start with the top four race, the top five in general. Two games in particular. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit maybe about Bayern towards the end of the show. But of course, their win against Frankfurt confirmed that they will be playing Champions League football next year. So they're not in the race anymore. Yeah, let's start with the top spiel, the Saturday evening match that we had between Stuttgart and Leverkusen. And so I think before I start to lose myself in the Leverkusen-ness and the mixed emotions that I was feeling about this game, and maybe more of a reflective mood, I can hand over to you in a sec, Peter. But yeah, obviously the story of the game was a fairly quiet first half in terms of the action. Obviously, there was a great chance for Paddy Schick following up a rebound, which he should have scored. And there was a great chance for Guirassy as well. But 0-0, obviously, at half-time. And so we got four goals in the second half. Stuttgart going out 1-0. A really fantastic finish from Chris Furyk after he following up a great rebound after Radetzky saved a Jamie Leveling effort. He was played in excellently as well, but I think it was Anton who supplied the pass, the pre-assist, if you will, to make it 1-0. Quickly followed up by great work by Undav to make it 2-0, dispossessing Andrić on the edge of the area, making it 2. Dreamland situation for Stuttgart. They didn't get pegged back quite quickly. 2-1 via Amin Adli, shot from the edge of the area, going through the legs of Anton and blinding Nubel, but it was a really well-placed shot to make it 2-1. Crazy chances thereafter. The game went into a frenzy, really, Peter. And obviously, we had the delayed drama. We can talk about that in a moment. But overall, this was just a game of such high quality, especially so in the second half. And, I've not been wanting to say it all season, but Germany's best two teams all season.
Absolutely. I believe, I don't know what pod it was, but we talked about how the German national team used to have a Bayern Dortmund axis, and now it has a Stuttgart Leverkusen axis, thanks to the two big surprises this season. I think that tactically speaking, the first half, as you mentioned, was a little dry, and that was to be expected, considering the fact that two of the best midfielders in German football, in Granit Xhaka and Angelo Stiller, were unavailable for the game, having been suspended. Credit to Sebastian Hoeneß for having the guts to stick Enzo Milo in midfield again next to Atakan Karadzor. I think he did a very good job. Leveling most certainly atoned for some of the errors and mistakes that he did last week.
He did.
Another great game from Chris Führich and Dennis Undav, our two new German internationals and part of that axis, which also includes Waldemar Anton and Maximilian Mittelstädt, who I will never grow tired of saying couldn't get past Marvin Plattenhardt at Hertha, but is thriving under Sebastian Hoeneß. For the second consecutive week, we, of course, had this Leverkusen never losing side earning a late draw off of what was fairly standard set piece. Lukas Hadrecki in his post-match comments, of course, Hadrecki kept them in the game with several amazing saves. It was one of his best performances of the season. Mm-hmm. But he mentioned that, it's 50% quality and it's 50% luck. So sometimes everything just breaks your way. You're going to have luck if you're going to go for an undefeated season. So I imagine that you're not feeling too bad about your lads. I think that they did a very, very good job. And in many respects, they could have easily won the game had Hrodzki not gotten hot, or had Gerasi polished off that late effort as well.
So I just want to pick up two players I want to quickly cover, Peter, in regards to the attacking output for both sides. I think, Morris has already mentioned it. Clearly not Gyurassi's best day. On another day, he maybe has four. He definitely should have had three, let's be honest. That probably should have been game over, the 3-1 chances for sure. Because, frankly, the rest of the sides really played an excellent game. Nubel in net with some of those saves. That double save was ridiculous to keep them in it. Absolutely unreal. Gyurassi's not best game. I don't think Frimpong had a great game either in regards to the quality that he was trying to produce for Leverkusen, because Leverkusen did get down Maxi Mittelstädt's side quite often and did expose him. And those cutbacks or the chips or, the crosses, they just weren't of the usual high quality for Frimpong. So I just thought those two players didn't have their best game, because otherwise we could have ended up 4-4-5-5, really.
Absolutely. Hopefully everyone enjoyed a quality game of football. And you're right about Frimpong. Of course, it's been well established for several weeks that Frimpong may be the player that Leverkusen are aiming to sell at the end of the season. Although there was an interesting story about Jonathan Tah appearing today from Fernando Caro, who said that Tah will be sold if he doesn't extend his contract. Very unlike Fernando Caro to say something like that. Ta, of course, was our new German national team defender, part of this Leverkusen axis that includes Florian Wirtz and potentially Jonas Hofmann again, if he can keep his form up, was injured and was not able to come out for the second half. A really spectacular job by Piero Hincapié, I thought, in this one, filling in the back three. Xabi kept his tactics pretty tight here throughout until, Vietz was introduced. And as is often the case when Vietz is introduced late in matches, there's not much going on the tactics board. Vietz is permitted to do whatever the hell Vietz would like to do. That's one of the reasons why they've had this amazing, magical season. As you mentioned, Bayern have clinched their place in the top four for Stuttgart. This does constitute losing points, but as we say, on 64 points with three match days remaining and a nice 7-point cushion over Borussia Dortmund, it looks to be the case that Stuttgart should be able to secure Champions League football next season. And Sebastian Hoeneß has promised that he will go on the fence with the youths, with the ultras, and celebrate once that is the case.
I very much look forward to seeing that. And I hope I see it next week, because, of course, they take on Bayern at home in the Sud Derby. So what a spectacular way to do it that would be. So we look forward to that. Yeah, great game. Overall, one thing I just want to pick out, and maybe it's bias, so yeah, shoot me down by all means, people in the comments, whatever. Why was that push from Victor Boniface not picked up by VAR, Peter? Because it looks pretty crystal to me that he pushes Rouault in the back, which therefore means he can't clear the ball properly and the ball falls to Andrić to score.
The officiating Felix Zweier was given near failing marks in the German press this week, as was the entire officiating team. As I've mentioned many, many times on the pod, referees are graded in the German press. The lowest German score that you can get is a 6, which is failing. Zweier was given a 5.5, and I believe that you're right, Rory. I concur with you wholeheartedly. This was a poorly officiated match, the VAR team and the Keller deserve outright failing marks.
Thank you for the backup. Wasn't just the only one. Okay, lovely stuff. We'll move on. Just wanted to quickly pick up a good evening to everyone in the comments and who's watching with us so far. So evening, Moritz, thank you for your comment already. Justin, of course, thank you for tuning in and letting us know about our little admin error this morning. Guten Abend, William. Good evening to you. And, of course, Mark has popped in the chat as well. Mark, hope you're doing well and able to enjoy with us. Mm-hmm. Right then, next game on our list, of course, was the other game, directly involving our other contenders for the Champions League spots, RB Leipzig taking on Borussia Dortmund, which, of course, as you can see on screen, ended as 4-1 victory for the home side. I think, all week, me and Mark were kind of just edging this slightly. I think I ended up going 3-1 for Leipzig, and obviously 4-1 even better for the home side, obviously pushing themselves 5 points ahead of Dortmund now in regards to fourth and fifth place. Leipzig now only 2 points off Stuttgart in third place. So absolutely excellent performance overall. They did have to come back from a goal down. Peter, it was a bright start by Dortmund and summarised by a lovely finish by Jadon Sancho. So we can maybe talk about bright early Dortmund and then we'll get on to some Leipzig stuff. So what did you make of Dortmund that came out of the blocks pretty well?
They absolutely did. I mean, this was it was very, very surprising to see that Leipzig were able to come back from the 1-0, as a matter of fact, because it seemed like everything was proceeding according to plan. Some very, very interesting tactics from Terzic in this one, in that it was kind of like it was a 5-2-3, but the amount of space that you had, and you had Salih Özcan operating almost as an inverted sweeper. There was Felix Lameche and Julian Brandt in midfield, and then this huge gap with Jadon Sancho and Karim Adeyemi and Nicolas Füllkrug. And this led to a lot of chances. They were very, very good in transition play. There were a lot of chances on the break. The first opening quarter of an hour was incredibly exciting. I mean, this was just there was some end-to-end action as well because they were vulnerable on the counter. They had this huge gap that Leipzig could exploit with their 4-2-2-2. And then all of a sudden, things just dry up for them. I mean, it was a very, very poor game from Füllkrug, who I don't think got a header anywhere near on target. But, you know, what happened first and foremost, this was one of Xavi Simons's best games of the season. And that is saying a lot, because he has supplied us with just amazing games this season. And I mean, he was superhuman in this one. And it's almost inhuman to think that he was only involved in the score sheet on that one assist. I mean, this was just an incredible game from him. Peter Gulácsi, of course, did make his fair share of saves. He did an excellent job in that regard. Marco Rosa, who has been sticking with his tactics and has incurred a lot of criticism for just, you know, rolling out this system and maybe not picking the right personnel, now has things sort of all falling into place. The midfield axis of Haidar and Schlager is clicking very well. A healthy Dani Olmo to pair along with Xavi on that second axis always helps. And the one decision that he made in this one, the one personnel change that he made in this one, starting Simakon at right back, who didn't even have any experience at right back until Rosa started deploying him there, I think it was last season, that paid off huge dividends as well. And then, well, Simakon got hurt, and then Hendricks came on and also did a fantastic job. So he's done a good job, I think, with you know, sort of facilitating competition for that position. Both players want that position, and both players are performing exceptionally well in that regard. This was, I mean, they are really on an excellent run of form, Leipzig. They truly are. It does come together. It looks to be the case that they'll secure Champions League football next season. If I can get a plug in from my Bully News colleague, Moritz Beyer, who brought the six-team Champions League scenario to my attention, and then later wrote an article about it. It's looking more and more like that might potentially, happen with Dortmund finishing out of the top four, and we can get to their Champions League prospects in a sec. You know, what you had with Dortmund tactically after that good start, in the 46th, he brought on Marco Reus, that is for the restart, he brought on Marco Reus for Karim Adeyemi, who had a terrible first half. And he tried to format into a 4-2-3-1. And then a little bit later, he tried out this 3-2-3-2 that was actually working out kind of well for him early in the calendar year with Ian Motson going into midfield, but he didn't have Ian Motson. So that made all the huge difference. You know, we had a lot of second-choice players for Dortmund in this one. Marius Wolf, Julian Ryerson operating on the left there. Özcan, who hasn't gotten in a lot of practice this season. I'm still, you know, I've become the biggest Terzic apologist out there. And, you know, I still would fancy their chances against PSG in the Champions League midweek. I'd be interested to get your opinion on that matter as well, Rory. But I think that, you know, it's just weird. What's happened with Dortmund is weird. I remember the last pot of last season, we were commiserating over how they let the title slip through their grasp. We talked about what a bright future they have ahead of them with Terzic. Now we have Terzic having two assistant coaches. If you want my opinion on the administrative moves that were made by Dortmund this week, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why we need to bring Sven Mislintat in as a squad planner. I don't understand why we've got this young guy taking over Vatska's position. But anyway, now is Rory's turn to give his take on Dortmund, because I'm sure that, let's see what do you have to say about Dortmund, the administrative moves, the tactics, their chances in the Champions League?
Well, yeah, overall, I mean, I just, still a bit confused by them. But like you said, Peter, they're in the Champions League, I don't feel like I can write them off, as you shouldn't do in a semi-final, because you absolutely have every right in a two-legged match as well. Obviously their opposition, PSG, their threats are, of course, you know, go forward, they've got an abundance of talent, and Dortmund are going to have to defend so, so well. We're going to have to see, Hummels and Schlotterbeck and the rest of the team just really step up again and pull something out of the hat, which I think they can do. I think they definitely have a chance over the course of two legs. I honestly kind of feel like it almost goes in their favour in a weird way. In this match, when I saw them go 1-0 up, I wasn't surprised, but obviously the players that they were missing, which you've listed quite rightly, Peter, I think was always going to be a big problem for them. Like you say, seeing Marius Wolf come in and having to move Riason over to left back, no Mattsson, obviously no Emre Can either. So we saw Sally Yozcan come in. Fulcrute didn't have his best day. He had that one header right at the start of the game where Sancho chipped it into him quite nicely. And Galacci, as Justin quite rightly said, kept Leipzig in it for a bit of time. And then it just dried up. I don't know what happened. Obviously, the two goals, basically either side of halftime, the Šeško one where he showed great awareness to be there on a rebound. So why aren't Dortmund defenders reacting in that way? So as Justin said in the comments, there were some defensive lapses or mistakes and a great counter. I don't know where the Dortmund defence are on the third goal. Absolutely all over the shop. They break really well. And ironically, they scored their second goal in the 47th minute and they scored their third goal in the 46th minute. Figure that maths out if you can. Good to see Baumgartner get on the score sheet as well, because he's a player that really, really admired and liked at Hoffenheim. And I thought the move to Leipzig really made sense, but we haven't seen him thrive or obviously start as much because of different circumstances. So it's nice to see him get his goal. I'm sure he'll play a bigger part in games and seasons to come, perhaps for Leipzig. But for Dortmund, honestly, I don't really know how much more to dive into it. As I think you've already done a really good job of it, Peter. Anyhow, the administrative moves seem a little strange. They've got obviously to concentrate on making some really important and good decisions in the transfer market to come. There was a lot of harsh comments or hate, if you will, for Nemecha across social media, for what it's worth. Obviously, he being the signing who replaced Jude Bellingham, and how can you deal with that pressure? An impossible job anyway, but what I'm saying is that he didn't have his best outing either. So, there are certain things that Dortmund need to fix. And I think it's quite probably fair to say that they are and have been the fifth best team right now in the Bundesliga. There is obviously a big gap between the top five, quite rightly so. Dortmund are quite definitely part of that because they played a big part in a lot of matches. But right now, they're not quite there, but there's no reason why they can't turn it around and find Vettel midweek. So very much looking forward to that, and I'll be absolutely cheering them on 100%, hoping that results go Germany's way to complete or confirm a top five, and then we won't even have to have this discussion. Fingers crossed anyway. Anyhow, we shall move on from the top four. Some really good games to enjoy, as we rightly thought they would be. We shall move on and talk about relegation, the relegation battle, which saw the confirmation of Darmstadt's demise and relegation into the Zweite Bundesliga after their 1-0 defeat to Heidenheim. It was almost confirmed prior to that. But there was a late show from Köln to get back into the match against Mainz to keep them afloat in this relegation race. So that was obviously a hugely entertaining ending to the match. Lots going on in that. But we'll kickstart it with the game on Friday night, shall we, Peter, which saw a huge, huge win for Bochum. To beat and hold off Hoffenheim in regards to a mounting of a comeback of sorts. But this was a really, really well-deserved victory overall. Bochum got themselves into 3-0 lead. Stoiger just showing his absolute class. So the opening goal for Bochum, obviously being the set piece, the free kick, excellently delivered and executed into the top corner. We saw some quality goals this weekend, didn't we? I was watching the top five goals on the Bundesliga website today. And yeah, incredible goals. Those two Wolfsburg goals, I'm sure we can come on to them as well. And we had, two excellent goals in this game, the second of which we'll come to in a moment. But Bochum got themselves 2-0 up just before half-time. Really importantly, Felix Paslak in the right area to pounce on a bit of poor defending from Hoffenheim. So 2-0 at the break. They managed then to stretch their advantage. Stoiger getting on the end of, he started the move, which he set up the player in question. I can't remember who got the shot off, but it's saved by Baumann, and Stoiger's there to knock in the rebound for 3-0. You're thinking, absolutely cruising in now, Bochum. Excellent victory. Well done. But Hoffenheim do like a goal, and they do like an exciting game. Back they came. Obviously, a good bit of play down the right-hand side led to a shot, which Kramaric claims he got the last touch on. So that made it 3-1. So a bit of a start of a comeback. And then the second goal that we saw from Kramaric was just him running onto a hopeful long ball, brings it down perfectly, and then just loops it over Ryman in net. The delicious lob to make it 3-2, and obviously really give the heebie-jeebies to the home side and the Bochum players. The comeback obviously did not get completed, or they didn't go all the way, and Bochum saw out the points exactly. And there's another... there's another point in this match that I want to pick up in regards to officiating as well. I'm on one tonight with refs and officiating, because I'm damn tired of it in the Premier League and Man United getting stitched up anyway. So I can use my frustration on that as well. but overall, I think the XG for Bochum, Peter, was over 4. And they had something like 35 shots or something ridiculous like that. I mean, they deserved it, didn't they?
3.92 XG for VfL Bochum. Good Lord. where the hell did that come from? I don't think any of us were expecting such an entertaining affair in the curtain raiser on Friday night. And Kevin Stöger was named by pretty much every German press source as the man of the match day, the club man. Former Mainz professional, of course, but he returned to Bochum, and he's always left his heart on the pitch for Bochum. They needed him to come up with something here. You know, I found it humorous that Heiko Butcher, at his post-match press conference, said, you know, they asked him what he did tactically, and he said, well, I didn't do anything special. And that much was obvious. As a matter of fact, Heiko Butcher was just sort of built, he was brought in to let the team run themselves, more or less. And that's why so many of us were concerned that Bochum are going to be dragged into the relegation race. They still are there in the relegation race. I think that when it comes to the current state of the relegation race, what we need to do is take a look at place 13 and below. Obviously, you mentioned Darmstadt officially relegated this weekend. Probably adds some insult to injury that it was done against FC Heidenheim, the club that they were promoted with last season. Basically, from place 13 down, that looks to be our relegation race at this juncture. We have Borussia Mönchengladbach on 32 points, followed by Union with 30, Bochum also with 30. Mainz, after just getting a draw against Köln, are on 28. Köln themselves are on 23. The relegation playoff place, believe it or not, is still possible for Die Geisburger after that embarrassing home KO last week. I think that what we saw from Bochum, it's difficult to process it. It's weird. The relegation race and the race for European places below the top five were totally intertwined this weekend. Big wins from Wolfsburg and Werder Bremen away. Wolfsburg over Freiburg at home. And Bremen over Augsburg at home. meant that two of the main contenders for that Conference League spot lost. But of course, Hoffenheim and Eintracht also lost. So that's ridiculous. I mean, these Werder Bremen and Wolfsburg, though it is not official yet, Werder Bremen with 37 points, Wolfsburg with 34 points, looks to be the case that they have gained some separation from the relegation pack. The good old German word is Befreiungsschlag. Basically our relegation race now, with Darmstadt already gone, consists of Gladbach, Union Berlin, Bochum, Mainz, and Köln. Yeah, that's quite a field. That's quite an exciting field, I think, to wrap up the three match days of the season. Mm-hmm. Before we get into any specific teams, or before I get into any specific teams, Rory, which ones would you like to talk about? And then perhaps you can throw it back to me whenever you're
ready. Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing I just want to cover and not brush over, because Darmstadt are down officially, and I think it'd just be nice for us to just quickly touch upon them. Maybe not necessarily in regards to the match that they played against Heidenheim, because they huffed and they puffed, but Heidenheim had the better chances, and of course they struck late on to condemn them to Darmstadt to defeat. Obviously, it's officially done now. Darmstadt are obviously planning and looking to life again in the zweite Bundesliga, Peter. What do we think about their season overall? They just never really got going. I think there was a stage, maybe, was it 8 or 9 games in, where they were maybe in the middle of the pack a little bit after getting a couple of positive results. But after that, they got sucked into that horrible winless run. I really have felt for them in regards to their squad availability that they've had most of the season as well. Managers and teams measured by their success and what happens on the field. And there's not many excuses that are accepted these days, but you have to take that into account. Most of their attacking talent and threats were stripped away from them most of the season. They had Tietz and Pfeiffer stripped away from them by Augsburg at the start of the season. Just quickly, they've tried their best, but ultimately they just didn't have the quality. And they've got some good players in there as well. But throw it back to you.
You mentioned the most important thing right there. And I'm sure that there was a bit of schadenfreude in the Darmstadt circles this weekend when Augsburg lost, because they had Tietz and Pfeiffer both stripped away from them by Augsburg. And that was probably the most significant thing. That was their leading goal scorer in the Zweite Bundesliga campaign last season, as well as their best defender. Mm-hmm. And the injury luck, oh, good Lord. I mean, Marvin Mehlheim got injured, was only able to play 17 games. He scored 3 goals for the team. Fabian Nürnberger has been struggling with injury all season long.
Mm-hmm.
Hansak as well. Not to say that the striker signings of Fraser Hornby and Luca Pfeiffer were particularly good ones, but particularly, as I'm sure, as Rory knows, Luca Pfeiffer was not something that you could expect a lot out of. Hornby, he got hurt, and one could have, we could have seen more from him. We could have seen more from Gerrit Holtmann, the Filipino typhoon that we were all so excited was back in the Bundesliga. That was their big January signing, along with Julian Justvan, the Hoffenheim loanee, who did a great job when he was on the pitch, but had his injury problems as well. Not to delve into, a coach's personal life isn't something that I like to talk about, but Torsten Lieberknecht's wife also had a stroke this season. I mean, it just simply, when it rains, it pours.
Yeah.
And it rained all over this, this team. And their prospects were not good at the beginning of the season, and just simply everything went wrong. And I wonder, their rebuild is something that might be worth following. Because they have brought in this English sporting director, Paul Fernie. He looks very English. He's a good old ginger fob. And I think they're going to probably, if you ask me now, I think they're going to stick with Lieberknecht. Yeah. And it's possible that they could be up, you know, with a responsible rebuild over the summer. It could be the case that they're back up in the top flight before you know it. Obviously a very, very sympathetic side. Probably one of my favorite shows of the season. As a German football diehard and a fanatic who loves his Kurve and loves his teams and everything, was when you and Mark interviewed the Darmstadt gentleman just prior to the beginning of the season. Yeah. I thought he was very, very eloquent. I thought he explained German football fandom for what it's worth, and why, you know, these clubs need to be owned by the fans, and why they belong to the towns, and why they belong to the communities. I'm not going to toot my own horn. I appreciate the comments on the vlog, and I'll just say really quickly that, you know, hopefully I aim to convey with that vlog just how you know, how personal it is for people who live in these towns. And when the teams go through three bankruptcies, as Ulm did, that's okay. They can accept that. They'll make light of that. They don't need their team to be pumped full of foreign money to succeed. German football fans will accept the hard times, and this is true of every club from Schalke to Kaiserslautern. We will accept the hard times so long as the interference in our game is not coming. So the Darmstadt fans, not to spoil any future vlogs or anything, but the Darmstadt fans, they took this like champs. They absolutely took this like champs. They don't mind going into the Zweite Liga. They don't mind the fact that, you know, Mark and I talk about this sometimes. In England, there's so many protests about why aren't you investing in the team? Why aren't you investing in the team? Why aren't you throwing money into the team and things like this? You don't get that in Germany. Darmstadt fans, they took all of their hits in stride this season. Mm-hmm. And at no point were they screaming at the club administration to go into debt, to overleverage themselves, to to take on any additional money. So Darmstadt, you will be missed, but hopefully we'll see you again soon.
Yeah, very well put indeed. Yeah, they've done their level best, but ultimately just come up a little bit short. So the other, if we talk about Mainz Köln, then going obviously onto a game that had great importance on it in regards to relegation, Mainz started this game with great intent. They're on the front foot for a large proportion of it. They managed to go ahead. They obviously via a bit of a break. Was it Onisiwo who managed to get the shot off, which is saved, and Barrero comes in perfect timing to score the rebound for 1-0. Chances thereafter came aplenty. Sepp Vandenberg had a couple of headed efforts, which he could have maybe done better with. There's a big one, of course, for Johnny Burkhardt, who's been in fine fettle as well, where he can't quite get his effort on target. And that maybe was a really big moment, to extend that lead and go 2-0 up and, you know, do the job of all but condemning Köln, and they would have relegated Darmstadt at the same time. Then the second half, Peter, didn't start off in an ideal way for Mainz, but Köln were not able to convert their first penalty. Oh, dearie me. Yeah, not a fine moment for Waldschmidt overall. So, yeah, and then it was still Mainz that were fairly in control. But there was maybe just a moment where Onisiwo had to go off injured. He did his finger, didn't he, or popped it or something like that. So he has to come off. Widmer comes on for him. Is that right? And then Köln make the triple substitution of bringing on Mark Oot, Miner, and Damien Downs. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point, then Köln were actually able to get a foothold in the match, a bit more positivity, a few more chances were coming their way. Then we, you know, get to the end of the match. The penalty incident obviously occurs again with Zentner going in and making obviously the error. Loads and loads of pressure on Florian Kainz, who steps up and does a fine job of putting it away to make it 1-1. Then we get a late red card for Mwene. Obviously, a fairly nasty tackle there to obviously put Mainz under further pressure. And then there's a late chance for Marcoot as well from, I think, the resulting free kick, which his header is either well saved or it just goes wide of the post, for which Kong could have almost completed another fine late comeback, but it wasn't to be the case. Damage done for both sides, really, to be honest, Peter. I mean, in the sense that Mainz could have really stretched themselves out of this relegation battle and the playoff spot in particular. And Köln, obviously, they had to win. Goes without saying, the point doesn't do them a great deal of difference. And I know Moritz is saying that Köln will ultimately go down this weekend. He is not too enthusiastic, which is absolutely fair. One real bit of damage for Mainz going forward, Peter, is the amount of suspensions and players that they're now going to have missing for next week. Who's going to be there? I mean, Gruder, Amiri, Mwene now, Onisiwo, depending on the injury. I mean, that's a great deal of damage. And from how quickly they started and the great positivity to go 1-0 up, could have been 2, could have been 3 maybe at half time, then all of that kind of bad, ill feeling that they're probably now left with.
Yeah, I mean, that was a shocking result. I think that I'm sorry to mention this, Moritz, but when Luca Waldschmidt missed that penalty, I just thought to myself, there's no way that this match can possibly end with Köln getting anything, getting anything from it. They had 0.17 XG in the first half, had Johnny Burkhardt converted that chance, it really would have been over, the one that you mentioned right there. They found their fight back and they showed incredible morale down the stretch. Downs and Mina, where did that come from? Mina was excellent off of the bench, I thought. Odd to see that Kainz wasn't in the lineup, but he did a fantastic job too. And with Marcoot, I mean, look, he's a hometown hero. He was an amazing footballer. I mean, this is a player who he's had that unfortunate pubic bone injury, and let's hope that Leroy Sané doesn't follow the same trajectory. I mean, that's an injury that really does affect someone's career, and it affects the ability of a player to play permanently, and it can end careers. So the fact that, we can talk all we want about Oot and the fact that he's perpetually injured, he maybe should have retired and all these things. he came off the bench and made it count for his side this time around. When it comes to the penalty, the handball penalty, was it on Barrero in injury time that was not... awarded. I think that was the correct decision. That was not an intentional handball. That shouldn't have been awarded. Mainz were lucky that Anthony Kachi didn't get thrown off on double yellows in this one. So when you talk about those suspensions, I think they still have Kachi, right? Next week, because But I mean, we've been going through this saga with Henriksen where he's had like 9 players that have been on 4 yellow cards forever. And he keeps saying, oh, I'm fearless. I'm going to throw him out there and we're going to get the points and we're going to do this and we're going to win. Well, eventually this caught up with him now. So we shall see. But again, as a point of emphasis, Gladbach, Union and Bochum are very much still in the relegation race as well, I have to say. Mm-hmm. And I studied the 0-0 draw between Gladbach and Union as part of the research for the later week tactical column this time around. And I don't recommend that anybody else study that match because it was a terrible match. I'm really concerned about Gladbach now. I really think they
were outplayed at home.
Yes, and they... You know, it was a few weeks back that I went on this like diatribe about Gerardo Seoane's lack of a footballing thesis. now I'm really, I mean, I could explode at this point because I'm so tired of him and his personnel decisions like this. I mean, you almost get the feeling that club management has ordered him to get the team relegated. I mean, might not be a horrible idea for Gladbach at this point. Maybe they could spend a season in the Zweite Bundesliga and sort things out and rebuild. You know, like the Zweite Bundesliga is not the EFL championship where teams can go down with a nice little parachute payment and do a house cleaning and come right back up again. Yeah. But sometimes that's the case. I mean, sometimes that really is the case. Yeah, that's a great point from Moritz too. We could have the Rhein Derby in the Zweite Liga. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, we could.
There's still a lot that can happen. And so, I mean, we're going to have some very, very interesting conversations over the next 3 weeks about the relegation race. Relegation race very much still on. For those teams, for that packet of teams between 17th and 13th place, those five teams, I'd say they're all still candidates for the drop.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely agreed. It will keep us busy for the remaining match days. We look forward to seeing it all. And I, from a biased point of view, I am so very glad that VfB Stuttgart are not in said drama and we can talk about them in such a way. Just want to quickly pick up William on William's comment here. Any comments about the atmosphere or lack of at the Gladbach match? Can't say I overly noticed it because I had to. Well, I was watching it on silent, to be honest, William. Peter, were you able to pick up anything in regards to that?
I did notice that it was somewhat subdued, but I've not read anything about the ultra scene engaging in any deliberate atmosphere boycotts. I know that there have been. I mean, look, this is a very, very old ultra scene. It wouldn't surprise me at all to learn that they would have engaged in some boycotts and not cheered on the team in their normal fashion. But I can't verify that factually, and I certainly wouldn't want to, because I have a lot of respect for Gladbach ultras in particular. I mean, they are a very, very active scene that does great choreo and backs their team through thick and thin. So I would have to see about that. I mean, there's no stories have popped up. I would check out the forums. I would check out some of the Gladbach forums to see what's going on there. It might be the case that it could be the case that they're protesting, you know, all of this club mismanagement over the past four seasons and these four seasons of mid-table mediocrity. Mm. But the Gladbach fans have also been quite vocal in the fact that they felt betrayed by Marco Rosa when he went to Dortmund. They felt and this is a controversial issue with Max Eberl, who of course resigned from Gladbach. You know, he went back in tears when he cited burnout. He was obvious. He was honest about the fact that he was having mental health issues. But then, of course, he went to Leipzig, and now he goes to Bayern. So, I mean, it's the Gladbach fans have been very, very angry. I mean, they've made several protests in controversial fashions against Marco Rosa, against Max Eberl, and even against Dortmund in general. Because don't forget, Dortmund picked up Marco Reus. He was a Gladbach product. But to my knowledge, I cannot verify that. I cannot verify that they engaged in any sort of deliberate atmosphere boycott this weekend. It's an interesting story to perhaps look into.
Yeah. Thank you for raising it, William. That's yeah, quite interesting as well. Grand. We'll just spend the last few minutes or so just covering, cleaning up the rest of the action that happened over the weekend. We've already kind of mentioned it, Bayern getting the job done against Frankfurt. Ari up to his usual business, getting both goals for Bayern, keeping him in contention, of course, to break the record that Louis is still holding on to. So we'll be watching that with great interest. And for Kane, his own personal season, he's settled in perfectly. He just scores goals, doesn't he? That is what he does, and that's what he's continued to do in the Bundesliga. He, of course, will be, well, I mean, it, just very quickly, we'll talk about Bayern and their pending Champions League contest with Real Madrid. From an English perspective, obviously, we've got Harry Kane versus Jude Bellingham matching up. The two teams, again, I think this can be an interesting matchup. I think Madrid have obviously got certain, well, weaknesses that that Bayern can definitely exploit. And if Bayern get, if they can have Musiala back for it, which sounds like more promising. Was he back in training today? I saw a few bits or, well, mentions of him being possibly available. And but oh, Bayern have got, they just have to go all guns blazing for it, don't they? And so, Peter, just very quickly, what do you foresee in their semi-final chances?
I like their chances. I like what Tuchel has been doing tactically recently. It's impossible to bet against Jude Bellingham on a good day. But Mark brought it to my attention that there's been a petition by Bayern fans. I think it's up to 14,000 to get Tuchel to stay because he has demonstrated a lot of great tactical acumen in the last few weeks. Mazraoui is working out very, very well as a left back. Rafael Guerrero has settled in on the wing there. Thomas Müller is performing also well as a winger. You have Choupo as a service striker this weekend. That worked out quite well.
Yep.
So Tuchel has got a hot tactical hand at the moment, and I would not necessarily bet against that.
He's been there's a position, obviously, to see whether Tuchel might stay. He's also been flirting a little bit with the Man United job. Obviously, as a Man United fan, I'm quite aware of that. Whether I want him to be the next Man United manager is another question. So that's for another day and different podcast, perhaps. But Bayern, confirming Champions League football for next season. We'll be watching them with great interest tomorrow. Absolutely. From a German perspective, Frankfurt usually play a lot better against the bigger sides. We often see this. Nice for Ekitike to get another goal backing up. Really important for his confidence, and that shows that Frankfurt really do have a player in Ekitike, and you know that's obviously now why they signed him on a permanent deal. So that's obviously a positive for them. Just jumping across to the Christian Streich farewell tour takes another unfortunate turn with the home 2-1 loss to Wolfsburg. Obviously taking from this, Peter, with two world class goals from Wolfsburg. I mean, Maxi, we know that Arnold can do this from a set piece. Lovely, lovely goal, excellently curled in. But that Lacroix effort, I mean, stone the crows. He hit that ball bloody hard. that was something else. To win the game, of course. And Lacroix's always in the action, whether he's getting sent off or scoring goals or doing something. He's great for entertainment, is Max.
Maxi Arnold's has always been a set piece specialist. I think that I recommend that people look up both Kevin Sturger's dead ball goal and Maximilian Arnold's ones because they were both brilliant. Yeah. And that Lacroix one, I mean, I don't think I've seen a goal that beautiful since Philipp Lahm scored the opening goal for the 2000 World 6 World Cup hosted in Germany. That's how amazing that goal was.
Yeah, good stuff. So, an important win for Wolfsburg as well. Obviously, from a relegation point of view, we've kind of extracted their game from the relegation chat this week, at least. Disappointment for Augsburg. And I know Paul McGarrigy, obviously, over the bars, Paul went across to Germany to watch this and obviously took in the game. Obviously, a hugely disappointing afternoon for the home side, Peter. This was an accumulator buster for me. I think I just needed this to win my accumulator, so I was desperately disappointed as well. Verd again, the job done. Back to back now, more goals to Dusch. Schmidt heavily involved. Demand coming off the bench, getting that header towards the end of the game as well. So, some real positives for Werder. Just to summarise, they've done enough to drag themselves out of relegation contention as well now.
Absolutely, we mentioned the 3-4-3 last week. It's working out really well. It is, with Volta Mata there, slanted left. And Augsburg, it's just, I mean, they were a little bit unlucky there in the beginning, and we had those two disallowed goals in the first half. Mm-hmm. But Torup's tactics, this 4-4-2 diamond, it's too predictable. I mean, teams can prepare for it. And that's why I wouldn't take them out of the race for the Conference League necessarily.
Right now, just yet. Yeah.
But yeah, Werder on 37 points and Heidenheim with their win as well on 37 points. It is not officially confirmed that both of them are safe, but yes, they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, we mentioned the player earlier, actually, Pfeiffer with a bit of clumsy defending for the second goal, giving the penalty away. So he's not really, versus the signing of Tietz, who's come good, particularly in the Rückrunde or throughout the season, scoring goals. Pfeiffer's not really featured for Augsburg, has he? He's been a bit part player and he might have had his injury worries, and he's come off the bench a lot more than been, you know, a regular player in that setup.
Yeah, really. Two slumping players in that Augsburg central defense. Hoveleo was stripped of his captaincy in the offseason. It was given to Demirovic. Mm. And his expiring contract was not going to be renewed. But Haveleo, the good old Dutch Golden Lion, he came good for his club, and he took that spot back. Pfeiffer was going to be worked in slowly. I don't even think he didn't take it away from Pfeiffer at the beginning of the season. And then there's also the former German youth international Felix Udulkai. Mm-hmm. Who he's had a surprising renaissance this season. Gotta love Augsburg. You got two center backs that, who the hell can pronounce the names? Haveleu and Udulkai. Yeah. I just need to kill everybody.
I struggle to this day, let alone anyone else trying to pronounce it. Yeah, great stuff. So that was the rest of the action. So, well, it's a nice way to finish up this evening then. So it's been absolutely fantastic to work our way through match week 31. Of the Bundesliga. Hope you've all enjoyed the show. Thank you to everyone that's watched and contributed and commented along. It's been great fun. All there really is left to say is, well, we'll draw your attention to is shows to come. Obviously, we'll be predicting match week 32 on Thursday. There should be fantasy football action for you on Friday morning as per. And yes, there could be a couple of lovely vlogs for you to check out. Even more new ones. Go check out the old one. Go check out the Fortuna Dusseldorf one. You've done so many, I'm finding it difficult to keep up with you guys. So much great stuff. Yeah, we did a bonus pod last week with Matthew Karacik from the Zweite Bundesliga pod. That was great fun. Check that out in regards to who's going to come up, who's going to have it. You know, St. Pauli, Kiel kind of got away with it this weekend in terms of the promotion race as well. All sorts to discuss and look forward to. So, stay with us and make sure that you like, comment and subscribe. That would be rather lovely if you can. Check us out on Twitter or X, Over the Bar FB and Village Footy. And just as a bit of a reminder as well, you can absorb us via an audio platform as well, should you choose, on all good audio platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it. Go find us, leave a rating, leave a review. And that would be fantastic. So thank you, Peter. Thank you, everyone. And we'll catch you in the next one. Cheers all.